Welcome to Books on Air. I'm Suzanne Harris. Books on Air is a series where we do a deep dive into the writer's passion. We talk about why they write the book, what their writing process is like, and what they hope their readers will take away from their book. You'll get a real glimpse behind the curtain, if you will. Joining me today is a fascinating gentleman. His name is Arthur Rutledge, and he's here to talk about his book, Legacy of the Melchizedek. Melchizedek, the little book.
There you go.
Arthur,
the little book.
Welcome to Books on Air. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Susan.
Now, there are stories that books tell. Books have two stories, not just one. They have the story that the author, like yourself, writes for the reader. But then there's always a story behind the book. I know your story behind this book, and I'd like for you to share that with our listeners because it's quite fascinating. Would you do that?
Yes, ma'am, I will. I was just a person from way out in the woods, so deep in the woods, if I gave you the directions, you couldn't even find it, in Texas, way down in the backwoods of Texas. So I grew up there, and I was raised by black parents for a long time, and I was raised by Hispanic parents, because my mother was so violent, and I couldn't stay at home. So I went, and these other people raised me. So I ended up, and I went to prison for killing a man that was robbing me. He robbed me with a gun. I killed him with a knife, and I went to prison. I didn't know God. Didn't know a thing about God. Nothing. Not anything about God. And so I read the Bible while I was in prison. I heard what people said, and I said, look, God, if you're half of what you say you are, if you're even a fraction of what you say you are, then you'll come right here, right now, to my jail cell. And he did. He anointed me in the spirit, and he put a couple of angels with me to write this book called Legacy of the Melchizedek. I couldn't believe what happened because I never knew God, and when this happened, it just, like, floored me. So I write this book in prison. I did 33 years and 3 months in prison, and I wrote this book, and I brought back 300 pages of handwritten notes, and I finished it once I got out. I got up at 3 o'clock every morning, and I worked on the book, and then I went to work. And in 35 years, I completed it with extra biblical stuff that I needed. I couldn't get in prison out here. He delivered everything I could possibly need. And then now, when he brings me out of prison, he delivered me the rest of it. And so I write this book called Legacy of the Melchizedek, which the church called Melchizedek, which is the priesthood of which Jesus is the high priest. It's never been explained until this book came along. Not only do I explain the priesthood, but I explain every single mystery of the book completely so that people say, you sure right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. You sure right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I give them all the scriptures and I explain all the mysteries that nobody ever understood for thousands of years. So the angels that God put with me to do this book, they give me a direct revelation. And with this direct revelation in my book, which is Legacy of the Melchizedek, the title of this section is called Ancient History Before Heaven and Earth. It tells where the Creator come from, who he was, where he came from, and everything about his civilization, what he did, what he found here when he got here. And it goes into the legacy of the it goes into the legacy of the Anunnakis who came here before him. The Anunnakis came about 60,000 years ago. He came 30,000 years ago, and they upgraded the DNA from man at that time was really called Homo erectus, which is more monkey than man, and they couldn't train them to work in the mines. So they upgraded them to Neanderthal, and they worked them in the mines. And when the Creator God came here, he said, no, you got to let them people go. And he said, besides that, it's your own DNA. This is your own DNA. Why are you slaving them? Let them go. And they started the war. He bombed them off the planet. And then once he did, he upgraded us again. to what we are, which is the lineage of Adam. The Homo sapien, which is Neanderthal, means thinking man, but Adam was Homo sapien sapien, which means superior thinking man. And that's who the lineage we have. Now, if you go into anthropology, which I do, and you go into historical DNA, which nobody coined that term but me, and you look at this, here's what you find out from anthropology. We were upgraded 2 times, missing link is a gap. So when the Creator God upgrades us again, we have the Homo sapien, which is Neanderthal, and the Homo sapien sapien, which is us, superior thinking man, living side by side. Probably where Cain went to get his wife. And at that point there, the Homo sapien sapien, which is our species, continues, but Neanderthal disappears. And the reason is the Creator God's not going to bless somebody else's children. That's not his children. That's the Anunnaki's children. If you go on my website, www.legacyofthemelchizedek.com, that's M-E-L-K-I-Z-A-D-E-K, I have further readings on this, and you can see for yourself. Everything in my book is, everything is citated. I take you to several different websites. I take you to other books, and I citate every scripture that I cite, and I talk about, I cite the scripture. Many times I quote it because, you know, a lot of people don't want to go and look it up. So I just quote it and citate it. Go look for yourself. That if a person does a writing and they don't citate it with, and they don't back it up with nothing but I say so, I'm not going to read it. So I back all the things that I say with scripture, other websites, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You go look for yourself. Don't believe me. Go look for yourself. That's how I do things.
Let me ask
listen
you
to what I have.
Let me ask you one question. The book cover. The book cover is a two-headed lion. What does that represent?
Zerah and Perez, the two twins born to Tamar. This is where the whole takeoff begins. But if you look at the beginning of my book, the big beginning of the introduction, it is Israel. Brief history of Israel, a divided, got it? Divided nation. And then it goes in to talk about Tamar, who was a daughter-in-law of Judah. And she was married to his oldest son. But his oldest son was evil, and God killed him. This scripture, go to Genesis 38, the scripture. He killed him. So she, you know, according to the Jewish law, if your wife is married to you and you die, she's given to your other brother, and he raises up seed to his brother, right?
Right.
If you read, yeah, right. So he gives him to the next son, and the next son didn't want her to inherit the birthright and the scepter. So you know what he did?
No.
He had sex with her, but he pulled out when he was going to ejaculate, and he spilled it on the ground. The Bible tells you this. You know why? Because if she can't get pregnant and get her former husband's name in the genealogy, and she can't have a kid, he says, oh, she can't get pregnant. She can't have a kid. Now, my wife and my kid gets a genealogy. But God saw what he did, and he killed him. So Judah doesn't give him to his youngest son, which is Shelah. He don't give her to her because he's afraid he'll die too. He only got 3 sons. And if the third one dies, that's it. So Judah goes down to shear the sheep, and he goes by this place, and she puts on garments like a harlot. You need to read Genesis 38. The whole chapter is about this. And she puts on garments like a harlot and veils herself, and Judah turns in to have sex with her because she's a harlot. And he has sex with her. She says, where's my money? Oh, I don't have no money right now. She said, what do you give me as a pledge for the money so you'll bring it back to me? He gave her staff and his senate ring, and I'll send somebody back with the money, and I'll get them back. She said, okay. So he sent somebody back with the money, and they say, where's the harlot in this place? What are you talking about? There ain't no harlot in this place. No harlot here. So 6 months later, 9 months pregnancy, but 6 months later, she's showing because she had twins. And they drag her out before Judah and said, look, your daughter-in-law has played the harlot. Let's stone her. That's what the law says, stone her to death. And she brings forth the staff and the senate of Judah and says, now whoever man these belong to is the father of these children. He slaps his face. He slaps himself in the face. He says, woman, you have been more righteous than I have. For I should have gave you to my younger son, and I did not. And he kept her as his wife, but he never had sex with her again. But she brought forth twins, Zerah and Perez. You looked at the book cover?
Mm-hmm. I did.
Zerah and Perez.
And that's what the lion represents?
The two-faced lion, the twins.
But
here's the catch. According to the law of God, it says the firstborn is he who opens the womb first, and he that is born first. So Zerah sticks his hand out, and the midwife ties a scarlet thread around his hand, said this one came out first. But he pulls his hand back, and his brother is born first, Perez. And his name means law breacher, law violator, because he was first, but you pushed ahead of me, and now you're first, but you violated the law. But the truth of the law is there's two prongs to everything in the law. Everything's two prongs. He that opens the womb first, and he that is born first. Zerah opened the womb first, tied the scarlet thread, he pulls a hand in, and then Perez is born first. So here's what happens. Israel gives a scepter of Judah to Perez. But this is all God's doing. It ain't no mistake. So when you look at the genealogies in Matthew 1 or Luke 3, all of them, the genealogy is through Perez. They don't mention Zerah, but as his brother, and that's it.
Arthur, when you were writing this book, wouldn't you say that this whole situation with everything that happened to you when you were writing absolutely was a way that changed your life?
Absolutely.
It made you a different person, didn't it?
Look, I was no good. When I went to prison, I didn't even know God at all. I used to shoot dope and all of that before I went to prison. And I go to prison, and I'm anointed with the Spirit, and I begin to write this book. The angels try to tell me, this is who you are. I said, no, I'm not. This is who you are. No, I'm not. This is who you are. It took them 6 years to, you know what convinced me? When I figured out the complete plan of salvation. And I said, okay, now I see it. This is who I am. Here's the deal. Everything's in twos. The scepter was split between Zerah and Perez. It split. And Ephraim and Manasseh of Joseph split the birthright. So Jesus is born 2,000 years ago to Perez. You check the genealogies in both Luke and Matthew. It's through Perez. They don't mention Zerah. But they don't. Here's what they don't mention. He also picked up the birthright through his mother. If you go back to Deuteronomy and all these chapters, the women said, hey, we don't have no man. We don't get a birthright. We don't get no land. We don't get, that's just show you're right, you do. You do get, because you're women, you still get a birthright. You still get the land. So his mother was of the tribe of Ephraim, and his daddy was of the tribe of Perez. But the women don't have a genealogy in biblical history nowhere.
Right.
But you go back and look at what they call judicial finding, when he takes it to the judges, and it's a judicial finding, he says, you're right. Y'all get a birthright. You get the wealth. You get the land. but it's not according to the scepter. The scepter comes only through the man, but the birthright, according to Judal regulation from Moses, is yes, you get the birthright. So Jesus was born to Joseph, who was of the tribe of Perez, and he got half of the scepter, not all of it, because the other half went to Zerah. And he gets half of the birthright from Ephraim, but not from Manasseh, because you see, when Israel crosses his hands, when Joseph brings Ephraim Manasseh to Israel to bless them, usually that birthright is passed by both hands on one person, but he placed his hands on two different people, Ephraim and Manasseh, and he crossed them. And he said, not so, my father, don't cross your hands, not so. I put the elder to your right hand. He says, I know, my son, but the younger shall be greater than the elder. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So Jesus was born, and he got half of the birthright. He got half of the scepter. And for him to receive the other half of the birthright and the other half of the scepter, he's got to be incarnated again, and he has to be born of the tribes of Zerah for the scepter. He has to be born of the tribe of Manasseh for the other half of the birthright. He don't get it. If you read the beginning of my book, I start out with a brief history of Israel, a divided nation. It explains all of this. For Jesus to get the totality of the scepter and the birthright, he must be incarnated again. And here's the catch 22 again. He only preached to Judah. There were two different captivities, right? One captivity went into Babylon, that was the southern nation of Judah. The other captivity went into Assyria, the 10 northern tribes of Israel. Now, 70 years later, under Ezra and Nehemiah, the southern kingdom of Judah returned to the land and rebuilt the temple, and that's who Jesus preached to. That's who he preached to. But the 10 tribes of Israel went with the Assyrians, and they migrated when they never came back. They call them the 10 lost tribes of Israel. So this day it's called the 10 lost tribes of Israel. And they migrated the Assyrians into the steeps of the Caucasus of the mountains, finally into Europe, into Eastern Europe, and Central Europe, then Western Europe, and then Scotland, Ireland, England, finally migrate to America. And that's where they are today. And so Jesus only did half of the ministry because he was given 7 years to preach. He only did 3.5 years to preach.
I was just curious. When you were writing the book, did you think about who would be reading your book?
You know what I thought about?
What?
I thought about truth. Only truth, nothing else. I don't care who reads it. I don't care what they get from it. I don't care what they believe. But in the end times, and they're coming soon, it's only about truth. If they want to reject truth, fine. Because you're going through tribulation, and you're not going to like it. But you're going to get your stuff right at the end of tribulation. John says at the end of tribulation, he sees all these people, they're all clothed in white. He turns to the angels and says, who are all these people? I can't count them. They're as numerous as the sands on the sea. Who are they? He tells the angel, who are they? And the angels turn to him. You know what he says?
No.
He said, this is Revelation. These are those who came out of tribulation. Now they got their clothes white. Now they got it right. Now they do. But the people that believe this book and the ministry I'm fixing to do and listen to what I have to say, they're not going to do tribulation. They're out of here. Everything's in twos. Everything is in twos. There's a taken out before tribulation. There's a taken out after tribulation. Twos. Those that believe what I'm fixing to preach in the book, they're out of here. You're not going to do tribulation. There's only one God, not three, not two, not many, only one. If they believe that, and they believe what this book says, and they believe what I'm fixing to preach, because I'm going to do a ministry, then they're out of here. They're not going to do tribulation. But those that reject it, and there'll be so many reject it, because they're going to cling to the false teachings of the church, they're going through tribulation. And at the end, just like Mama said, and he know what your mama used to say?
What?
You can't hear me, but I bet you can feel me. And she whoop your ass. She would whoop you good. Now, well, you got any more questions? No, ma'am. I ain't got no more questions. No, ma'am.
But I do. But I do.
God is our daddy in heaven. He's not going to disown him, but he's going to whoop him.
So if you could look, the people who are listening to us, who will become readers of your book in the eye, what would you tell them the bottom line is from the book? Is it what you just said? Is there something else that you want them to take away from the book?
You know, it's pretty much what I just said, because I'm off the cuff. I don't pull any punches. And if the punches are too hard for you, then you're not a part of what I'm talking about. But the bottom line is this. If you really love God, you really do love God, you love Jesus, and you love him with your whole heart, then what I'm saying should make sense. And the bottom line is this. You want to cling to your preachers and what they say? You want to cling to what you think? You want to cling to that because you can't depart from it and hear what I'm saying? Then you're going through tribulation. That's it. I'm going to whoop you. You're going to get whooped. And when you get done with that whooping, then I want to know what you got to say. But everybody that says, hey, you know, you're right, it makes sense, I'm listening, and I really took a look at what you're saying, and it's correct, I give all the scriptures. There's no way they can't say, unless you're a real shallow person that doesn't look at the scriptures. I cite everything that I say. Everything I say, I give citation for it. Go look for yourself. Do not believe me. Believe the Bible. And believe the Bible, what it says clearly, not what it says obscurely.
Well, let me tell them the huh? title of the book. Let me make sure they know, because I'm sure after listening that they're wanting to know where they can find it. So let me tell them. The title of the book, and let me do some spelling for you, is Legacy of the Melchizedek, right?
Melchizedek. The little book. Zadek, long I, long E.
Kazadek.
Kazadek, Melchizedek.
Okay, by Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, Rutledge, R-U-T-L-E-D-G-E. Now, you can find this on Amazon. Now, Arthur, I know you have a website, so let's give them the website and tell them how they can find you on the web. Give them that web address again.
www.legacyofthemelchizedek.com, spelled M-E-L-K-I-Z-A-D-E-K.
Now, what else will they find on your website besides information about the book?
My own personal contact information if they have any questions, and they'll find the links where they can buy it through Arthur House, Barnes & Noble, or Amazon. And they will also find on my website, beyond that, further reading of these other authors that will astound them when they read it, such as there's one by the name of Jonathan Kahn. He writes some really good books. There's other books that are written like Search for Atlantis. There's so many books that I give for further reading that will enlighten people. There's stuff on ancient writings, such as the Sumerian tablets, which are the oldest writings we've ever found. And that will lend credence to what I'm talking about in my book about heaven and earth, right? ancient history before heaven and earth.
Now you're also you're also on Facebook, right?
Facebook and Instagram, but I don't have the addresses. I asked them to send me the addresses.
Probably if they put in your name, Arthur Rutledge, they'd be able to find you on both Facebook and Instagram, don't you think?
They'll find me, but the people that I'm with that did this advertising and stuff, they have advertising on Facebook and Instagram, and I don't know the addresses.
Okay.
But yes, you can go in there and type me up, and I have some stuff in there too that will lead you to the writings that I have, my book and everything.
Now, who's your publisher for the book?
Arthur House.
If they go to the Arthur House website, I'll bet they'll also find information about you and about the book. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, this has just been absolutely fascinating, Arthur. You've just done so much work. The book is so interesting, and everything that you've been talking about is so important. And thank you for giving this message to people who are listening to us. And I know that they're all going to want to pick up a copy of the book and read it because it's so interesting. Thank you so much, Arthur, for being my guest today. It's been so interesting and such a pleasure to talk to you.
Now, before you leave, I have one more thing to say.
Go ahead.
This is the greatest revelation from the Creator God that has ever been given in the history of this planet. And you know why?
Tell me.
We're down to the end times. You think he's just going to close this shit out without telling everybody the lowdown? You think he's going to close the whole earth out and tribulation, everything come, and he's not going to tell you the lowdown? He's not going to do that. That's not how God works. We're at the end of this world. We're close to tribulation. He's not going to let it happen until I do a ministry. That's me, Arthur, who is spelt like the King Arthur, who was the second most mysterious king in all of history, Jesus being the first most mysterious king, Arthur being the second most mysterious king. He's not going to close this out until he sends a real prophet to tell you directly. He never destroyed anything, but first he sends a real prophet, and you're going to know he's from God. And then he's going to bring in tribulation, not before. So what you got to understand is this book is a direct revelation from the Creator God, and it's the last and the greatest revelation that's ever happened in the history of the entire world. It's never happened before.
Wow. That's really something, Arthur. You've been listening to Books on Air, brought to you on the Web Talk Radio platform. You can also hear this podcast on Apple, iHeartRadio, and Stitcher. And remember, keep on reading, keep on writing, and keep on telling your stories. Thank you so much for listening.
And more important, keep on learning.